Chapman's Ice Cream just added a twisted treat with a whirlwind of flavors. Introducing the all-new Chapman's Twister. The fruit twist, strawberry center with twists of cherry, orange, and blue raspberry. The rainbow creamy twister, vanilla ice cream with twists of lemon lime, cherry, and orange water ice. Stacked and twisted, blue raspberry, cherry, lemon lime, and orange. And the Neapolitan creamy twister, vanilla ice cream with twists of strawberry and chocolate water ice. Add a twist to your day with Chapmans.ca.
Man, this guy can play. I am telling you what, he was on the show back in 2007, I think. Back when I was 14.
What calendar are you using?
Charlie Daniels, Grammy Award-winning recording artist. Never Look at the Empty Seats of Memoirs, the incredible story of a country music legend. Few artists have left a more indelible mark on America's musical landscape than Charlie Daniels. Readers will experience a soft, personal, personal side of Charlie Daniels that has never before been documented. In his own words, he presents the path from his post-depression childhood performing for millions as one of the most successful country acts of all time and what he's learned along the way. This book also includes insights into the many musicians that orbited Charlie's world, including Elvis Presley, Bob Dylan, Willie Nelson, Tammy Wynette, and many, many more. Instead of reading this really long bio, let's get Charlie Daniels on the line here. Mr. Daniels, sir, I have one question I want to start off with. Are you ready for this one? This is a probing question from Drew Marshall.
Whoop it on me.
Whoop it on me. I got to use that, man.
Nice.
All right, here we go. You ready?
Ready.
Did you have your Irish breakfast tea this morning?
I had my Irish breakfast tea this morning and every morning. I sure did, yeah. I'm surprised you know that. I thought that was a little known fact.
That is...
There's nothing secret about it.
That is something just really bizarre for, you know, somebody who's got the size of belt buckles that you do. I don't know anybody who's got big trophy buckles who sips tea in the morning. Come on.
Well, I don't sip it. I kind of gulp it.
Oh,
okay. it happened kind of by accident. Actually, I was touring over in England. We were coming home from Heathrow. And I had a little bit of English money left. I didn't have enough to, you know, go cash it in and get American money. So I walked in the duty-free shop, and my wife did, actually. And they had this tea beautifully boxed in a little wooden box. And we got it and brought it home. And I started fooling with it, liking it, and found out they had a distributorship in America. And I've been several years now. Yeah, I get up in the morning, make me a great big pot of Irish breakfast tea.
I think it'd be a great marketing campaign to have Charlie Daniels sipping tea, sipping this English, or I mean Irish breakfast tea in the morning. That's amazing stuff.
Well, with that great Irish accent he's
got. Oh, can you do an Irish accent, Charlie Daniels?
I wish I could. I've got a lot of Irish blood in me, but I have not got to that point yet. Maybe one of these days, you know. I love to hear the Irish people speak. It's just such a great little lilting accent that they have, but I have not accomplished it yet, I'm sorry to say.
Charlie, I have taught many people in my lifetime how to speak the Irish accent. May I give it a shot with you?
Please, please, go right ahead. Yeah.
Okay. All you got to do is make it sound like a question. Just make it sound like a question.
Huh?
Everything you say.
Make it sound like a question.
There it is!
Yeah!
Yes! Charlie!
Yeah!
Charlie O'Daniels!
I can't wait to get back to Ireland.
Charlie, when was the last time you had a chaw?
I quit chawing a good while back. It's been several years now. I had a stroke some years ago and just quit doing any kind of tobacco at all. I don't smoke cigars. I quit smoking cigarettes in 1968.
Yeah, but you still have that
for a while and all, but I haven't done it in a while.
You still have that.
Several years now.
You got a great smoker's voice, though. I mean, that the resonance in your voice is that from whiskey?
No, it's not actually a smoker's voice. It's from the many pieces of pollen that's floating around in the air in Tennessee and points out parts of the known right now. It happens about every year. I get this this kind of smoky voice from it. We go so many places. We're constantly changing. We get to see spring. We got to see the seasons change. And, you know, three or four different times a year, because we go from here to Iowa to where it's a month earlier or later than us, you know, and then but constantly constantly exposed to this pollen all over the place.
Charlie, are you still at Twin Pines Ranch?
I'm sitting here right now, Twin Pines Ranch.
400.
A rare Saturday night off. We moved a date around. We're supposed to do tonight in Augusta, Georgia. We moved it to November, so I'm actually off tonight.
Well, thank you for doing that so you could be on the Drew Marshall Show. That was very, very kind of you.
Yeah. It's worth it. Why do you think we changed it around? Why do you think we changed it around?
Oh, Charlie O'Daniels. Oh, diddly dee. Potato. 400 acres. Is that about right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
What kind of stock?
We raise horn Herefords and a few quarter horses. Our emphasis used to be on quarter horses, but the market for horses is not really what it used to be back when the cutting horses were hot and heavy and roping horses. So we do we raise the cattle, and there's been a pretty good market for cattle. Market's been pretty good in the last good little while.
Charlie, when was the last time you jumped on a horse yourself and heeled with a partner?
It's been a while. It's been. I'm not as young as I used to be, and I literally, you know, trying to rope and do things like that anymore. And I've had to lay aside a good bit of ego to accept that there are some things that you don't do at the age of 81 that you did at 60 pretty easily. But there are some things that you kind of need to back up on for fear you might hurt yourself. You know? So I don't really. I haven't tried roping in a while. I think I could still swing one. I don't know if I could do competition roping anymore or not. But I haven't done it in quite a few years.
Yeah, I remember at a jackpot roping one time, I saw this guy. He was just kind of an odd fella anyway, so we all knew something was going to happen. And calf came out of the chute, and the string broke, and away he goes with this. He bored somebody's horse, and away he goes. He's swinging the rope like some crazy rope-swinging guy. And next thing you know, in the middle of one of his swings, it gets caught on the fence post beside him and yanked him right off the saddle. It was like watching the Looney Tunes or something. It was pretty funny.
Well, you have to be really careful when you're roping. They've got a saying out west, a rope is like a gun. One goes off, one goes on. You know, if you're actually trying to rope something out in the wide open spaces and you get your rope messed up, it can really mess you up. You get your finger caught in it. People get fingers cut off. And I was always very careful about that. I'd throw a rope down in a minute before I felt my fingers get, you know, anywhere close to in jeopardy.
Oh, yeah.
But it was a lot of fun. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I did it in jackpot competitions. I never was in small rodeos. I never really got into the big stuff. But it was a lot of fun, something I thoroughly enjoyed. But it's a little too chancy for me right now.
Sure. Sure. Well, there's so many things that are a little chancy for anyone who's 81. I mean, going to the bathroom's a bit of a risk, you know?
Now, that I'm not going to admit to.
Okay, here's the quote. I know this comes up in every interview, but, man, it's so cool. Here's the quote. I don't want another guitar player. I want him. Who said that?
Bob Dylan. That's 9 words that came out of Bob Dylan's mouth that changed my life. It was 1969. He had come to town to do Nashville Skyline, and a lot of people think that was the first album he did in town. It was not. It was the third one. He had done John Wesley Harding and Blonde on Blonde here, and had developed a nucleus of musicians who played with him. He was very happy with. And they put the band together for this one, but the guitar player they wanted to use could not make the first session. He was already booked at another session and couldn't make it, and so I was asked to come in and fill in for him. At the end of the session, I was leaving, and Bob Dylan asked Bob Johnson, producer, where is he going? And Bob said, he's leaving. I got another guitar player coming in. That's when Bob said, I don't want another guitar player. I want him. And it just, you know, was like Bob Dylan was always thoughtful enough that in his liner notes, he would mention the names of the musicians who played with him on sessions. And he is the kind of artist that people really want to know about. And they literally read, you know, a lot of times you put liner notes out, nobody reads them. Dylan albums are read in the liner notes, and having your name on the back of a Bob Dylan album, and much less 3 Bob Dylan albums, was a really big deal. He was the biggest artist. And in my mind, he still is the leading artist in that kind of music. And it did a great deal for me. It raised my recognition factor by quite a bit.
Well, I wouldn't
maybe have some legitimacy.
I would have thought that there was another band that would have raised your recognition. See, this band gets me even more because my dog's name is Tucker. My last name is Marshall.
We worked with them last night. We were in North Carolina together last night. We worked together. We have done more dates with the Marshall Tucker Band than any other band we have ever worked with. And I imagine what you're talking about, I used to play fiddle on their records.
Yeah.
And that just kind of happened to us that they had somebody. I was not the first fiddle player. I think maybe Andy Stein played on the first record. But Toy was doing a record in Macon, and he said, "Why don't you come down and put some fiddle on this thing? I got some fiddle things I want done." So I took off down there and did it, and it turned into a lot. I mean, I did quite—I don't even know how many albums I did fiddle on with him. But when we used to play together, the two bands, we'd end the night up. I carried two drummers at the time. We'd end up the night with three drummers. I don't even know how many guitar players. Me on fiddle, and we would have this humongous jam session. And it was a great time. It was a lot of fun.
That's a man. All you need is Bill Monroe to walk in, you know? That'd be good.
I love Bill Monroe. I cut my teeth on bluegrass music. That's the first music I ever really attempted to do in a organized way with a band. Oh. And I did everything Bill Monroe did. I played mandolin for a while before I got started with Bill. And I have tried so many times. I saw the other night I went to, the day rather, I went to a memorial for Randy Scruggs. Randy passed away recently, and they had a memorial for him, and I was asked to come down and say a few words, and I ran into Paul Warren's son, the old fiddle player for Flat Scruggs, Paul Warren. His son now plays with a group called the Earls of Leicester, and I was talking to him, and he was talking about his dad. I said, "You do not have any idea how much time I spent sitting and listening to your dad's fiddle parts on records trying to figure out what he did." I mean, that bluegrass music was my thing at that time. I still do. I still love bluegrass music, but Bill Monroe was, gosh, he was the king. There's no two ways about it. He definitely was.
Now there's this one song you did. I can't remember the name of it. Something about Georgia, and Satan.
Georgia on my mind.
No.
That was Ray Charles.
No. Come on, you wise guy. I can't believe the devil went down a door. I can't believe that came out in 79. Are you kidding me? 79?
It did come out in 1979, and it came out. The story of that song, people ask me all the time, well, how did you write that song? It's one of the most boring
stories
about songs that we did. We had gone into a studio to record. We had written and rehearsed an album's worth of material for an album that would be called Me and My Reflections. We got in the studio and we come to the glaring realization we did not have a fiddle tune. Why we didn't figure it out before, I do not know. We had been rehearsing for months. So we said, well, let's go write one. So we moved the equipment out of the recording studio into a rehearsal studio in Nashville. And I had this line in my mind, the devil went down to Georgia. Georgia, there's certain words that kind of reverberate with me, for I've written several songs that have Georgia in them.
Yeah.
And this thing just kind of kept going through my mind. I started, drummer try this, bass player do this, that, and then Taz came up with a da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and we were off and running. We just put it together, and went back to studio and recorded, and as they say, the rest is history. And it has been very historical for me.
Oh, yeah.
I found out yesterday, my son does my publishing numbers and stuff, and it's an outfit called Spotify. Are you familiar with them?
I've heard of it. Yep.
I don't know anything about it. I mean, I'm lost with it.
It sounds like laundry detergent, doesn't it?
It does. Spotify laundry detergent, yeah. But there's some kind of performance outfit, and I come to find out, Devil Went Down to Georgia has had 40 million spins on that thing.
Man.
And I was just totally amazed. You know, it's just hard to imagine that those kind of numbers, but it's been an incredible song for us. We do it every night. It still plays on the radio on the oldie stations. And if we can't follow it. It's the last thing we play. We have nothing to follow it with.
Nope.
When that one's over, it's done.
It's done.
He's leaving the stage after that, yeah.
You know, excuse me, Charlie Daniels, the last time you were on the show, in the middle of the interview, your cell phone went off. You want to tell me what the ringtone was?
A ringtone is the devil went down to Georgia. I didn't know that it was. My son has dragged me kicking and screaming into every kind of technology I ever got involved in. I wouldn't even have a computer for years. He finally talked me into it. And then I come to find out there's literally ringtones for cell phones. The first cell phone I had was about the size of a brick, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was, I couldn't believe it. I literally, when my wife gave it to me for Christmas, I literally had to drive a few miles down the road and try it just to make sure it worked. I didn't believe none of that stuff. You know, I was just like, this can't work. Not when I get 5 miles down the road. And I literally went down the road and called just to make sure it worked.
Yeah. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you hear me now. I'm down here at the store. But, you know, it's like, I have never been, know anything about technology. So all this stuff is so new to me. And it just flabbergasted me that anything could, you know, the song would last that long to start with. And then that it would still be playing that many times on air.
Well, it was funny. I re-listened to our interview from whatever year that was, and all of a sudden I can hear in the background, which is very Irish, by the way, you know.
Oh, it's definitely Irish, yeah.
Hey,
The Dibble.
You and that dadgum song got in the movie Urban Cowboy.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember much of the cast? Do you remember the cast of Urban Cowboy? John Travolta. Do you remember any of the other cast members other than John Travolta?
Debbie Winger, who I knew when I went to the Freeman movie, and that was her, as far as I know, her first movie. But when I saw the movie, I said, this lady's going to be a star.
Yeah.
To me, she was the best thing in the whole movie. I mean, I thought she was just great. And she was. Of course, she did turn out to be a star.
Well,
but, you know, I was just, I was kind of, I don't like making movies, to be honest with you about it. You got to do it over and over and over and over and over, you know. And I don't know. That one was kind of, that's kind of interesting, really. I mean, what it was about was something I was very familiar with because I played so many beer joints and honky tonks, you wouldn't believe it. Mm. So being at Gilly's doing something was a, you know, I don't want to say home by any means, but it was not unfamiliar, let's say.
Well, I have a friend who was in that movie, one of the stars.
Uh-huh.
Her name is Madeline Smith. And
she played John Travolta's girlfriend.
That's right.
The extramarital one, right?
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, she married an NHL guy named Mark Osborne, played for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and Madeline was in The Super with Joe Pesci and Funny Farm with Chevy Chase and a bunch of different things. And she's retired from acting to raise her kids. She's a really inspirational woman of God these days, Madeline Smith. Can we do a little something fun? Do you mind?
Sure.
Let's give her a call right now.
Okay.
And I want to.
I don't know if you remember me or not, because I don't think we had any. I was there during. I was not there during the time that she was shooting. I was there when.
Yeah.
The things.
No. Listen. You cannot say I don't know if someone will remember Charlie Daniels. That's ridiculous. And she's seen the movie.
Anyway.
Just because you weren't there on set at the same days. So is it ringing? Okay. Let's have it. Bring that down a little bit. I don't know if it's loud in your ears, but it is in mine. And she may not answer, so we'll just leave a message. Okay? Wow. That's a weird ring. It's catching us by surprise. Okay, so we'll leave a message, because you're probably not going to answer. Hopefully she has an answering machine.
Yes.
Service. Message. Now I'm starting to sound like feel like Ruth Buzzy. One ringy dingy.
I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Thanks a lot. Bye.
To leave a callback number, press 5.
Okay. Hey, Madeline, it's Drew Marshall. We're in the middle of the show. I've got a friend here. I just want to leave a little message for you. It's just to say good day. Charlie Daniels, this is Madeline.
Hey, Madeline. Oddly enough, I was exercising the other day, and Urban Cowboy was on. You were so great, and I thoroughly enjoyed your part. God bless you. Good speaking to you.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Perfect. Okay, hang up, girls. That's good. You just made her day. She will be so thrilled with that. What a nice, nice thing to do. Charlie, I don't care what Brad Paisley says about you. You are a nice guy.
Brad Paisley better not be talking about me. I'm bigger than he is.
He's just a little punk, isn't he, eh? Just a little guy.
I gotta tell you what, he is a talented guy. This guy is, he's really, I had an embarrassing thing happen with Brad. I did a kind of a voice thing on a song he did called Karate. It was like a kind of one of these, I call it talking blues. Most people call it rap. But I did this thing on it, and he wanted me to do it at the CMA Awards at the stadium show they did. And I didn't know the words. He said, we'll get a teleprompter. And I had a teleprompter. And there's all these thousands of people at the stadium, and it comes on, and I come out on stage, and there was a big thunderstorm right before we went on, and evidently it had knocked the teleprompter out.
Oh, no.
About three lines of it came up. I did three lines, and the thing just quit. And I'm standing there. I couldn't remember the next. I couldn't remember anything about it. It moved like a machine gun, da-da-da-da-da-da, like that. And I couldn't remember it. I couldn't do it. So I had to stand there, and I finally just turned around and looked at Brad and took my fiddle, and me and him started jamming. And we jammed our way on out of it. But, yeah, that was pretty embarrassing, actually.
Oh, that's so good. So good. We just got someone on that called in here now. Let's go right there. Hello, Madeline?
Did you think I wouldn't call back after I heard that message?
Hi, Madeline. How you doing, darling?
Oh, my gosh. How awesome to hear your voice. Oh,
well, bless your heart.
You're like an angel from heaven, darling.
Well, I appreciate that a lot. I tell you what, I was the other day, it's kind of awkward to be talking because I was exercising the other day. I had a little exercise bike, a stationary bike. I turned always turn TV on, and there was Urban Cowboy, and I aged 40 years right then.
Oh, my gosh. They're still playing that old thing on the TV?
Oh, it plays a lot. It's constantly on. And
wow.
Dark hair, the dark beard, and, you know, I was standing up on stage playing, and all of a sudden, I didn't even want to go look in the mirror after that. But,
oh, my gosh. Are you in the studio with Drew?
You were great. You were great.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I was just a college kid.
It was good to see you in it, yeah, and you went on to have a very successful career, and I'm very happy for you.
Excuse me. Do you mind if I join in this conversation? You guys are taking over my show here.
True. I have to know. Would you like to know what I was doing when you called?
No, I'm not sure I do want to know what you were doing when I called.
Yes, you do, because you may have never heard anybody do this before.
Okay.
When I saw the number on my phone with the pinky finger that I had available, I went, is that Drew trying to ambush me during his show? Well, this is what I was doing. I'm in the kitchen. There's five people cooking in there, and I had a Tetra Pak of vegetable broth. I dropped it on the dishwasher, and it impaled on the spokes and started squirting everywhere like a fountainhead. That's exactly what I was doing when you called.
Wow. Wow. You know, I'm...
I think you ought to sue Drew for that.
Oh, whoa. Easy there. Come on.
So...
Well, I'm just glad that I finally got a chance to have you two say good day to each other. And, you know, you've both spoken mushy stuff about each other. You know, Madeline, you love Charlie Daniels, and Charlie, you love Madeline Smith, and remember her from Urban Cowboy. We've all had a tender moment here. Now, can we just get back to the interview, please? Can we do that?
And we love Jesus. Is that right, Charlie?
Amen.
All right.
Madeline, you just put an extra syllable on amen. I heard it. I heard it.
Hey, you leave her alone. She sounds Southern, man.
I know. No, this is worrying me. Anyway, Madeline, I hope we made your day, put a little smile on your face.
Oh, you did. I hope I did the same.
Oh, gee, there she goes.
You did for me. Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Bye, Madeline.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, that was fun.
Well, that was fun. That was a nice surprise. I had no idea it was going to happen when I called in.
Well, okay, let's talk about this country legend label that you got. I don't want to go on and on about you. What I want to know is, who are your legends? Who are your country music heroes?
My first, of course, going back to all radio days, I come from a small town down in North Carolina, and radio was not formatted at the time. I mean, they played everything. There was not a rock station, a country station, this and that. It was an amalgamation of all kinds of music. I mean, I was exposed to so much music when I was a kid.
Right.
And of course, my favorite was country. My favorite was the Grand Ole Opry, and of course, it was Roy Acuff and Ernie Stubb and Bill Monroe and all the early guys that were at the Grand Ole Opry. They were and still are very big heroes of mine. And somebody had told me, I remember coming to the Grand Ole Opry when I was 17 years old in 1954, and I sat in the balcony and sit there and watch that show, starry-eyed. Obviously, I just started playing. If somebody had told me that I was going to be inducted into the Grand Ole Opry on that same stage 50 years after the fact, or 55 years after the fact, I would not have believed them. My life has been, I have literally lived the dream. And has it been struggles? Yes, there's been struggles. There's been sacrifices. There's been all kinds of things. But those guys were the guys that inspired me to become an entertainer. Was people like Roy Acuff, people like Ernest Tubb, Hank Williams, the early country singers. You know, about the time Elvis came along, you know, Elvis was the first guy that made it possible for a country boy to play rock music.
Yep.
Because before then, you have to remember, it was all the big bands and the horns and all that sort of thing. And of course, Elvis comes along with a little four-piece combo with rhythm guitar, lead guitar, bass, and drums, and just changed the world. And I kind of got into that, him and Carl Perkins, and them, they were my people. Dwayne Allman's always been a big hero of mine. The early Pete Toy Caldwell, Marshall Tucker Band, what a great guy, what a great player. But anybody that, you know, plays what I like to say music, I mean, there's a lot of music nowadays I don't really care about, and I don't knock it because I certainly had my chance to do what I did.
Sure.
But it's a lot of it sounds the same to me, you know, and I'm kind of, my taste kind of go back to days before that. So I'd say the, you know, those people I named, and of course I like Eric Clapton, quite a few people that play really music, really play music.
But Charlie, who would Charlie Daniels get all fanboy about today? Like if you you're in some, I don't know, walking around some studio lot or some backstage country festival or something, and all of a sudden you turn the corner and there's so-and-so, and all of a sudden Charlie Daniels is, oh, you're amazing, and can I get your autograph? I don't know if your voice would go that high, but...
It would not be a music person.
No.
It would be a sports person. I nursed Hank Aaron from, I remember the Sunday he had hit his 500th home run. I was listening on the radio. He has been a long, long time hero of mine. I have never had the chance to meet him, and I've always said, if I ever meet Hank Aaron, I'm going to ask him for an autograph. He's been one of my long time heroes. Like I said, 500 home runs to 715 home runs when he played in Atlanta, and you know, I would certainly ask him. I don't really know of any. I mentioned a lot of music people. I don't get me wrong, that I'm impressed with and all, but I'm not very much of a, you know. I found out I've worked with a whole bunch of different people. I've come to find out they're all just human beings. You know, they're not.
Yep.
They're not. You know, they're not. They're not actually. Some of them, there's something different about the degree of talent that God gave them. But I'm not really get flabbergasted or starry eyed over anybody in particular.
Right. What about radio personalities? Anybody you get really excited about meeting?
Not in Canada.
Oh, jeez.
I'm being mean, doggone. I'm sorry.
You know, I have feelings too, you know, Charlie Daniels. Gee whiz.
I know. Yeah.
Listen, speaking of feelings, I've got 17 more questions, but it's we only said 25 minutes. Can you go a little bit longer, or do you need to go?
I sure can.
Put the kettle on for another cup of tea.
I've already had two pots of tea this morning. If I drink any more, I'm going to go through the roof.
Well, it depends.
You know.
No, I'm fine. We go on.
Okay.
Go ahead and ask your questions. I'm ready.
Okay, here we go. What did you say? What was that?
Drop them or snap them?
What was that?
Whoop it on me.
Whoop it on me. There it is. Whoop it on me.
Now, you said you're going to use that. You can't even remember.
Oh, I know. I know. Okay, whoop it on me, whoop it on me, whoop it on me. I got to remember that. So you saw Jimi Hendrix 2 weeks before he died.
I did. I was standing behind the stage and watched him perform. That was, 1969, I guess, somewhere right around there when... And before they had really learned to do these big rock festivals where you put the stage way up high where people can't get to it, the stage there was only about 4 feet high, and people could climb up on it. And there was 300-some thousand people there. They had torn the fences down. I mean, it was just a real mess is what it was. But it was kind of odd. I was playing with one of your countrymen, Leonard Cohen. That's what I was doing over there. and it was us, Jimi Hendrix, and then I think Joan Baez and then Leonard Cohen. We ended up the night. It was kind of a strange combination at that time of the night. But yeah, I stood on the side of the stage and watched him. Had no idea that in 2 weeks he'd be dead, none whatsoever.
When you were watching him play, what was your feeling? Were you like, wow, this guy can play? Or were you like, whoa, this cat is weird?
I had never seen him play before. And, of course, I had heard him. But regardless of, you've got to say Jimi Hendrix could play. There's no two ways about it. He's a great player.
Yeah.
He had what made him so great, he was so different. He just did things with a guitar that nobody had ever actually done before.
Yeah.
Just scratching the strings and whatever it was he did. I don't know what it was, but he sure did it. And I was impressed. I was kind of watching from a musician's point of view, you know. I mean, what is this guy doing? What is he, you know, what is he doing? That's the main thing. And I just stood there and watched, and he played for a while and then, you know, went off. And I remember watching him walk back to his trailer where there was television cameras all over him, and there was television lights, and he was trying to get back to his trailer. And it was, I remember that about it. And then, you know, a couple of weeks later, he was not with us anymore. What a shame.
Yeah.
There's no telling.
Yeah.
I sometimes wonder some of the artists that have passed early, and I've often wondered what would have happened had they lived. You know, what would they have been able to do if they had lived another 10, 15 years? There's no telling. I have no idea what Jimi Hendrix would have come up with if he had been able to, you know, be with us for another 15 years.
Sure. Or, I mean, Stevie Ray. I mean, both those guys could bend some serious gauge strings, right? I mean,
Stevie Ray. I love Stevie Ray. Stevie Ray was a great guy. Stevie Ray did. He was so, a guy told me one time, I never forget, I was in a Dallas airport and with some guy, and we got talking about Stevie Ray, and he said Stevie lived his guitar.
Yeah.
And I thought, what an apropos way of describing Stevie Ray Vaughan. He literally did.
Mm-hmm.
He was part of that instrument, or that instrument was part of him, or whatever it was, but he was so into what he was doing. He was so into it. He was so bound up in it, and it just became a part of him, and his fingers just, sometimes I think some of these guys like him that are super talented, it's almost like they don't even know what they're doing. They just put their fingers on the strings and they just go, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that's not the case, but it was so natural with him. It was so, I don't know, it was just, he was an amazing player. I probably, the most amazing blues player of his generation, mm-hmm. for sure.
We are chatting with Charlie Daniels, Grammy Award-winning country recording artist. Never Look at the Empty Seats, a memoir. If you've been enjoying this conversation, then this book you need to get, because that's what this book is all about. I mean, Charlie, you've been performing, well, you and Methuselah were in the first band together, I think.
Methuselah's in my second band.
He was a
horrible guitar player. I mean, he just never could get. I had to fire him three times, you know. But I tell you, Moses wasn't bad.
No, that's right.
Oh. And David on that harp, man, I would love to have hired him, but I didn't have a place for harp in the band.
No.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, man, you are a funny dude. Let's talk about this companion as well, available at Walmart as a companion to Never Look at the Empty Seats. It's Charlie's CD, Memories, Memoirs, and Miles, Songs of a Lifetime. 12-track album dedicated to the man and friend who taught Charlie Daniels his first guitar chord, Russell Palmer. This album also features two bonus tracks, Long-Haired Country Boy and Still in Saigon. CharlieDaniels.com is a good place to go. Let me ask you, which battle was the worst? Pacemaker, pneumonia, stroke, prostate cancer, or a post hole auger?
I think the most frustrating one of all was the post hole auger, because it put me out of business for about 4 months. I couldn't do anything. I mean, I got sitting around doing nothing, which I'd never done. I'm a very energetic sort of person, and it shut me down is what it did for and when I finally got all the casts and the things off and everything, and I sat down and picked up a guitar, it was like you know, my hand was like a slab or something. It was like a package of weenies or something. I couldn't try to move my fingers. I literally sat for 2 hours a day and played scales just to get back in where I could move my fingers.
So what, hold on, what happened? Was this like an auger on the back of the tractor on the PTO, or was it a portable?
Yes.
Oh, it was, okay.
We were digging post holes at my ranch, and I am not good around machinery. I mean, I literally should stay away from machinery. And I got caught up in the auger, and I got caught up. It was wrapping my arm around it, just breaking bones. I had breaks through parts of my arm, all the way through, bones coming out through the skin and all. And I never will forget, it was a diesel tractor, and my friend of mine was sitting on it. And he saw what was happening and turned it off. And if it had gone one more round, it could have pulled my arm off or done so much muscle and nerve damage, it would have been really hard to repair. I never will forget, I was down on my knees with my arm wrapped around that thing, and I said, "Help me, Lord," and that tractor quit. They unwrapped me, they took me to the hospital, and my doctor, who's a fine orthopedic surgeon, I said, "I just want you to get me where I can hold a guitar pick and a fiddle bow again." And he was making no promises. I went into the operating room, and when I came out, he said, "You're going to be all right. No muscle and nerve damage, just broken bones." And, you know, it's just God saved my arm. I mean, it's just no two ways about it. I've had some things happen in my life that I know. I mean, God's involved in every breath and every heartbeat. I know that. But major incidences in my life that I know that, you know, God had his hand on me, because otherwise it would pull my arm off.
Man. That might be the grossest story anyone has ever shared on this show. That's gross. That's gross, man. Ugh. Both Tim and I looked at each other and just shivered. And ugh.
You've already said that three times. I get the point. I've got you.
Okay. All right. So listen, let's get into something awkward. It's been all pleasant so far, right? It's
the auger thing wasn't awkward.
No.
Whoop it on me.
Whoop it on me.
That was awkward. It was not awkward, just gross.
Okay, yeah. All right. People know you as a gun-toting right-wing Trump supporter.
Uh-huh.
What is wrong with your country? Because as a Canadian, we hear things about y'all down there, and we hear things about your president. And we hear things about school shootings and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and NRA. And I know you just did a gig there recently with them. You know, we as Canadians, we kind of look down at you guys and go, "Guys, what's going on?" So what's going on, Charlie Daniels?
I can tell you in one sentence.
Okay.
We turned our back on God. God's principles, God's laws, everything I've got about. We chased God out of our schools back in the 60s. We have raised a bunch of people who have no knowledge of the saving grace of Jesus Christ. That's what's basically wrong with this country. And it manifests itself in a lot of different ways. We have got so politically correct. We've got so permissive. We have got so immoral in this country that people literally... I dressed bunch of kids at the juvenile detention center a few years ago, and here's all these beautiful kids, teenagers, that are locked up behind bars. And I told one of the guys down there when I got through, I said, "Why would any parent bring up a kid in a way that would come to a place like this?" He said, "If you'll come to court next Tuesday, I'll show you. These kids are nothing but paychecks. These kids are nothing but welfare checks. The more they have, the more they get." Now that has been. To some extent, a pervasive mindset with a lot of people. And we got kids that are raised and turned out on the street to do whatever they want to. Mm-hmm. We are not teaching. We have kicked morality out of every facet of our lives. And they're scared to death of the Ten Commandments. So that verse in the Bible is going to say something like, "Don't kill somebody. Don't steal from somebody. You don't try to take what somebody else has got. Be faithful to your wife or your husband." I mean, is that so horrible and so bad? And that's basically, as I said, it manifests itself in a lot of different ways. But it's not, I mean, that's the basic cause. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as I'm concerned, yes, I am. I'm a big, our Second Amendment is guarantees people the right to own firearms. I have owned firearms all my life. Well, ever since I was 12 years old. I've never shot anybody. My guns are locked up, put away. My granddaughter was here earlier today. They're worth. She can't get to them. That's one of the things that that people. And let me tell you something. The NRA constantly gets a bad rap. The people. I just went to that convention down there. All these thousands of people that come down there are decent, for the most part, God-fearing people. The best friend of legal guns of any organization in the country. And it's not, it just goes back to, we've got people who are going to cause trouble. They've got a huge, have you looked at the rate of stabbings in the UK in the last few months or years? I mean, it's horrible. You got people that are going to cause trouble. As long as we refuse to deal with those people, we're going to have problems. And we could spend three shows with me telling you what I think's wrong with my country. And I realize that there is a lot wrong with my country. But I want to tell you something else, too. There are a lot more good, God-fearing people down here than you would think. We never get press. They never talk about them. It's always the bad stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure from the outside, we like a Mongol nation. We're not. We're a good nation. We're a moral nation. But that part of it never gets gone. As far as our president is concerned, the big thing about him is he is not a politician. He does not belong to the old boys club. He is brash. He is loudmouth. And he says whatever on his mind, whether it suits anybody or not. But these people, these establishment politicians on both sides of the aisle, the Democrats and Republicans, are scared to death of him making any kind of headway, because if he does, people are going to say, why have we been voting for all these years? the economy has been wrecked for I don't know how long. Since he's come in office, our unemployment is down to 3.9%, which is the lowest it's been. African American and Hispanic unemployment is the lowest it's ever been. Women's employment is the lowest it's been in a couple of decades. I mean, it's just things have happened. Our press never talks about that. It's always about this Russia thing. There is nothing to this Russia thing. There is no, he's not him. And I don't even believe, I don't believe it's even anybody on the Democratic side and of the aisle has ever colluded with the Russians to the detriment of this country. I do not believe that. I do not believe that anybody in Trump's campaign or him or any of his people ever colluded with the Russians. That is a political thing. You know, it's not, it's something that they keep beating this dead horse. And one of these days, this thing's going to blow up. When Mueller gets to the end of the line, look at what he's doing. I mean, he's fishing in every piece of water he can find. And he's been over a year, he still hasn't come up with anything. It's time for my nation to get back to doing business. There is some very important things going on. This thing in North Korea. I've been to Korea 5 times. I've been to those blue buildings that they meet at up there at the demilitarized zone, the jumping off place. I know about what's going on in North Korea. And I mean, you hear it from going over, it's a whole different thing than reading the newspaper. This is the most cruel regime in the world. Just getting this guy to come to the table. And if anything happens, it's wonderful. If it don't, we're no worse off than we were. But, you know, there's some very important things going on right now. And everybody in America should be rooting for this thing to happen, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, instead of sitting back secretly thinking, boy, I hope this fails, because that's going to really make us look bad in the midterms. We're going to lose some seats. That's a bunch of BS. And I am not a Democrat. A Republican, I believe in term limits. I think that people go up and they surround themselves with power, and that they make these little conclaves and these little brotherhoods and stuff, and you can't get them out of office. We need, our president serves 2 4-year terms, should be the same in the Senate, the same in the House of Representatives. 8 years and you're gone. You don't have time to build these little power organizations up. It's a disservice to our country, but we'll never get it done as long as it's left up to the politicians. So anyway, I don't know if I answered your question or not, but I did put a lot of my personal feelings out there.
Well, let me tell you, I didn't know how you were going to handle that. And I I could listen to you talk about that stuff for a little while. Now, my buddy here, Tim, he is one of them there. What do I call you, Tim?
Tree hugger, snowflake, social justice warrior, whatever you want to
liberal
say.
Liberal, yeah. Kumbaya
yes,
guy.
Yes.
He's got feelings. I don't have any stinking feelings. I want stuff to get done, man.
Well, you know, when it comes right down to it, we're all trying to do the same thing, basically. I mean, my dad is into timber because nobody loves the woods more than I do. I live between two patches of woods. I love the outdoors. I came up in a family of people that were hunters and fishermen. Nobody are more conservative about it. Takes better care of our wildlife and our than a true sportsman. You know, I mean, that's the truth. My dad, when he harvested timber, he harvested what needed to be harvested. He took care of the woods. He made sure the dead tops of the trees were pulled away from the other trees so that the bugs could not go into them. He made it, he made his living doing that. So he naturally took care of it. And I was raised with, the first thing I learned about guns was you never point a gun at anybody or anything that you don't want to kill, whether you think it's loaded or unloaded. That's the first thing I learned before I was ever come close to pulling the trigger on one. And you know, it's like I don't hunt much anymore. I don't really have time to do it. But I do a lot of target shooting. It's therapeutic for me, and I really enjoy it. You know,
well,
but I don't. It's you know, I mean, he's got a perfect right to feel the way he wants to. And I'm sure, Tim, is that your name?
Yes,
Tim?
Sir.
Tim, I bet you and me could sit down in about a half hour. We'd find 2,000 acres of common ground.
Oh, no question at all. No question at all.
The problem is that people like you and me don't talk to each other. We criticize each other, and that's what's going on now, and it's fanned by the media. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got people in my band that, you know, are liberal-type people. I've got friends, a lot of friends that are. There's a lot of people that work with me that are. But we've got so much common ground that anytime we reach a sticking point, you know, we don't worry about it. You got a right to feel your way, I got a right to feel my way. But basically, everybody's after the same thing. Everybody wants to feed the hungry. I do. Everybody wants to clothe the naked. I do. It's not just a desire of mine. It's in my holy book, my Bible, that tells me to do that. And, you know, that's the thing. It's like we have a lot more in common than
That's why God invented beer, so we could have these common ground moments.
These conversations.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Spoken like a true Canadian.
With real beer.
Listen, Charlie Daniels, Grammy Award-winning recording artist, and the memoir is Never Look at the Empty Seats, which you'll have to pry from my cold, dead hands.
Wow. I've heard that before.
The website is charliedaniels.com, and sir, for your second time on our show, I hope there's a third. That's all I got to say.
Well, I do too. I've had a wonderful time with you guys. I thank you very much for having me on. God bless you.
Thank you, Charlie. Thank you.
Keep on keeping on, and I'm back. I'll try brushing up on that Irish accent.
Yes. Listen, here's what let's finish with this. Hold on. We're getting silly here now. I want you to finish with this. I want you to say, you're listening to the Drew Marshall Show.
You're listening to the Drew Marshall Show?
Yes! Yeah! Charlie Daniels!
Charlie O'Daniels.
Well done, buddy.
If they haven't bumped him off there for this last conversation that we had.
Oh, so good. So good. Sir, thank you very much. And I wish you the best. Thank you, Charlie.
You too. Thank
bye-bye.
You.
Bye. Charlie Daniels on the Drew Marshall
Show. Charlie O'Daniels.
Oh, stop it. How did you get yourself into that conversation? Oh, I brought you into it. Yeah, that's right.
He actually mentioned my name. So
say my name.
To the left.